You're listening to GLC on ReachMD. Welcome to this educational activity titled Translating Evidence into Action, Nonsteroidal MRAs in Patients with Heart Failure, is provided by Global Learning Collaborative. Prior to beginning the activity, please be sure to review the faculty and commercial support disclosure statements, as well as the learning objectives.
Hello from sunny Barcelona at the ESC Heart Failure Congress 2026. Today, we're focused on how to translate emerging evidence into real-world decision-making in heart failure, specifically the role of non-steroidal mineralocorticoid receptor antagonists in patients with heart failure with mildly reduced and preserved ejection fraction. This is CE on ReachMD. I'm Dr. Muthu Vadaganathan.
Hello, I'm Dr. Koichiro Kinugawa from Japan.
My name is Michael Böhm. I'm a cardiologist from the Saarland University in Germany. So now let's start the discussion. So we start with a patient case. It's a 70-year-old lady, Vutu. So she has HFpEF. Ejection fraction is 55% with hypertension, diabetes. She remains symptomatic with instructional dyspnea, despite guideline-directed therapy, including a beta blocker, SGLT2 inhibitor, a loop diuretic, and her body mass index is 33. EGFR is 52, and the potassium is 4.6 millimole per liter. So what do you think about this patient? How are recent guidelines or guideline updates, how do they position these patients in the treatment landscape? And how has the approach changed in heart failure with mildly reduced and preserved ejection fraction? And where do you see the role of non-steroidal mineralocorticoid antagonist?
Yeah. A very common patient who we see in clinical practice. And it's an exciting time for patients like her because the guidelines have changed. The evidence has rapidly evolved in HFpEF from one of a treatment approach that was largely empiric to now a structured evidence-based approach to care. Many global guidelines, including the Japanese guidelines, I believe, have been updated now for heart failure with mildly reduced or preserved ejection fraction. So this concept of GDMT, which was initially founded in heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, now includes and extends to HFpEF. Furthermore, it's very exciting in Europe. There was EU approval of the first non-steroidal MRA, finerenone. And so this actually establishes non-steroidal MRAs as an additional pillar of care in heart failure with mildly reduced or preserved ejection fraction, and joins together with established therapies like SGLT2 inhibitors. And I think that this movement towards approvals, guidelines, and evidence now allows for a structured approach that we can approach care, where we can incorporate these therapies early in a layered fashion rather than this traditional stepwise approach where we wait for patients to come to us with clinical worsening of disease. So this is the first evidence that we truly have of disease modification with multiple therapies in heart failure with mildly reduced or preserved ejection fraction.
Yeah, I'd like to mention about the Japanese recent revised guidelines. So we revised the Japanese heart failure guideline last year. So at that time, so finerenone is only approved for the DKD, diabetic kidney diseases in Japan. But before approval for heart failure, we changed the guidelines and recommended 2A, as you can see in this slide, for HFpEF and also heart failure mildly reduced ejection fraction. So we also include steroidal MRAs for HFpEF and mildly reduced EF. But those are recommended as a 2B in Japanese guidelines. So maybe many doctors believe so finerenone is the most important drug for HFpEF in the future.
Excellent. So curious on your take on when do you introduce a non-steroidal MRA into the treatment pathway and how early is appropriate in a patient with heart failure with mildly reduced or preserved EF?
That is a quite key question. So first of all, it's indicated we have the data. Usually it is recommended in Europe to stick to the inclusion criteria of the trials. So I would initiate it in a patient who has a EGFR, which is reasonable. A patient who has a diagnosis of HFpEF, and this diagnosis is usually made by the clinical composition of a patient or by on symptomatics and also on things like pre-diagnosis predictors of HFpEF, then you might improve the likelihood of the diagnosis by NT-proBNP and echo. I mean, that is something what we are doing. And then it's indicated, in particular in patients who have diabetes, which is one of the predictors of HFpEF and CKD, because that is the second indication of a non-steroidal antagonist prevention of kidney progression of kidney disease and also prevention of heart failure hospitalizations, even though they are not in heart failure. So that is the prevention indications. And if a patient indeed has heart failure already, then we should initiate quite early. So data from Fine Arts, who are involved in this, have shown that the treatment effect occurs very rapidly within the first 20 days. So there should be the same rule as in heart failure with reduced ejection, early initiation, as soon the diagnosis is made, and then introducing the therapies. And one of the touch point of the patients is maybe a hospitalization or an early presentation for worsening of heart failure, leading to an increase of diuretic doses and so on. And then it should be done. There is no reason to wait until advanced disease. Early treatment has the greatest likelihood to reduce the following events, and therefore early initiation is key. The question now, which is a frequently asked question, is if somebody is already on SGLT2 inhibitors, is maybe the effect reduced? And that is not the case, because we know in the secondary analysis from Fine Arts and observational data that apparently there are different mechanisms of SGLT2 and a non-steroidal antagonist, and they have an add-on effect. So the optimal treatment is giving both. It's a combination of SGLT2 and non-steroidal antagonist. Also on the kidney, Confidence has shown a reduction of microalbuminuria when it's given together, so there's an add-on effect, and therefore it should be given early. It should be given in combination with SGLT2. It applies to a broad population, and most importantly, it applies to a population which are really underdiagnosed. So the vast majority of patients only get the diagnosis when they have been in the hospital. And that, I think, is something which should definitely be improved in our European countries.
For those of us just tuning in, I'm Dr. Muthu Varadarajan, and here with me today is Dr. Michael Bohm and Dr. Kochiro Kinugawa, and we're discussing translating evidence into action regarding non-steroidal MRAs. I couldn't agree more. I think your point about urgency in HFpEF, it rings so true worldwide. In HFrEF, we've had that urgency for a long period of time as clinicians, but in HFpEF, it's considered a slowly progressive symptomatic illness. But here we're seeing early effects of a treatment that can truly modify disease course. So I'm curious, how do you, once you've actually decided to initiate a therapy, how do you approach dosing, titration, monitoring in practice?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there are two key factors. So one is the EGFR, and also one is the potassium level. So in this slide, I summarize the how to start the drugs, how to titrate the drugs. But briefly, so patient has to have EGFR greater than 25. And also potassium level is at least less than 5.5. So Fine Arts heart failure study includes only potassium level less than 5.0, but in the reality, so maybe a 5.5 is a better threshold for the inclusion for these drugs. And also dose should be selected to initiate this drug. So if the patient has a EGFR greater than 60, you can choose starting dose at 20 milligram. But less than 60 for the EGFR, you have to start 10 milligram per day. And also potassium levels and EGFR is changed after initiation of the finerenone. Let's say the initial drop by the finerenone is observed in the final study, and also potassium levels, not very much impact on the potassium level, but a little increase is observed. So you can check the potassium level and EGFR at least within 4 weeks. After 4 weeks, his potassium level is going to higher than 5.5. You should change the dose. Sometimes you have to reduce, and sometimes you stop the drugs. But the target dose is 1 milligram per day for the EGFR greater than 60 and 20 milligram for the patient with the EGFR less than 60. So you have to do every effort to attain a target dose.
I agree completely with the dosing schedule. So the other thing is, what is hyperkalemia? Hyperkalemia is a lab value. The definitions vary quite widely across all the guidelines. And so 5.5 can be just a by chance finding, but withdrawing the therapy at that point of time might be very difficult. Mm. You've done a very nice analysis showing that the effect is vanishing very quickly. So an uncritical withdrawal of therapy is something which should not be done. So I think we should follow the guideline recommendation of the ESC guideline to maybe stop it, to look and repeat the potassium value, then reintroducing it and continue therapy, because we know that then, of course, we are losing the benefit. And that is, of course, for the patient, a much worse effect than having just one lab value. So if there is a problem with hyperkalemia, which is more likely in patients with CKD, with an elevated creatinine or lower EGFR, look for the results, because there is also hyperkalemia in the placebo group of all the trials, including the non-steroidal and the steroidal ones. So therefore, it should be solved why it is the case, the value should be repeated, and then the treatment should be maintained. So these are the major safety consideration. So what is your take on these safety considerations with non-steroidal antagonists?
No, you really beautifully summarized a lot of the core principles, the practical aspects of management. And of course, there are going to be certain therapies that you don't use alongside a non-steroidal MRA. You don't, of course, combine a non-steroidal MRA with a steroidal MRA like spironolactone or eplerenone. You don't combine it with other potassium-sparing diuretics that might cause excessive increases in potassium levels. We avoid use alongside moderate to strong CYP3A4 inducers or inhibitors. But I think the actual practical safety considerations are related to not overreacting to small changes. And so we do anticipate, like all MRAs, a non-steroidal MRA will induce an early increase in potassium that's often slight or modest in levels, does induce, based on pharmacological engagement of the kidney, an early transient reduction in GFR or this GFR dip. And so these changes are physiologic and expected. They're not associated with kidney injury or oftentimes severe hyperkalemia requiring hospitalization, for instance. And so the key is maintaining therapy during this early period, continuing to monitor patients, of course, and follow patients proactively to allow them to continue to garner benefits long-term from a therapy like finerenone. And that's true for all guideline-directed medical therapies, but it's especially true for non-steroidal MRAs, because these early changes in GFR and potassium are unfortunately common reasons why MRAs are discontinued in clinical practice.
Yeah, in Japan, so historically, well, many HFpEF patients taking spironolactone. There is no such evidence, but they traditionally use spironolactone. So we usually change spironolactone to after the guideline revise. So we have a very good feeling after conversion to finerenone. There is not many side effects rather than steroidal MRAs. Hyperkalemia occurred, but it's mild. And also EGFR is sometimes getting better after the conversion. And also impact on blood pressure is minimal, because the spironolactone or eplerenone has some blood pressure lowering effect, but in the heart failure patients, severe hypertension is a bad thing, so especially for kidney function.
So, well, this has been a fantastic conversation, But before we wrap up, I'd like to go around and share some final concluding thoughts. For me, this is such an exciting time, and we finally have a new approved therapy that is now guideline supported for the management of heart failure with mildly reduced or preserved ejection fraction. And for me, finerenone is an additional pillar of care for this previously difficult to treat population.
Right. So my take home is obviously something which we haven't discussed in depth, is the underdiagnosis of HFpEF. So it was termed hypertensive heart disease, and that had the connotation of just treating hypertension and the problem is solved. However, with the new drugs, finerenone, non-steroidal antagonist, mineral corticoid antagonist, including also SGLT2, we have blood pressure independent effects on outcomes. So make the diagnosis and then start early and an appropriate combination therapy and as early as possible with two drugs to have the maximal effect on outcomes and the maximal effect on disease modification. I think that is my personal take on the new data on HFpEF.
Yeah, so me too. So because I believe finerenone or non-steroidal MRA is a truly disease-modifying agent for HFpEF patients. So my take-home message is don't overreact to minor side effects. So that's my message.
So friends, that's all the time we have today. I want to thank our audience for listening in. I want to thank Professors Michael Bohm and Kochiro Kanagawa for joining me and sharing all your valuable insights. It was great speaking with you today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
This activity is provided by Global Learning Collaborative. To receive your free CE credit or to download this activity, go to reachmd.com/CME. Thank you for listening.